Chapter 2, The First Colloquium. You didn't think it was going to be that easy, did you? Rosalind's eyes fluttered open. Over her loomed a lean girl with something sharp in her hands. To make omelets, her roommate Shane prompted. You told me last night that making good omelets was hard. But look at the awesome breakfast goodness I have made. Gaze, if you will, at the artistry of egg and cheese. Gaze! Rosalind turned her back to Shane and muttered, It's Saturday morning. Why are you waking me up on Saturday morning? And the memory returned to her. I was drunk when I told you that. I thought we agreed that nothing I said when drunk counted. We shook on this. In 23 minutes, it will be Saturday afternoon, lush. Now look at my omelet, damn you. Look on my works, mighty, and despair. Shane walked to the other side of Rosalind's bed and pushed the cast iron skillet toward her face. Inside lay a yellow mass, speckled with red and green, as well as what looked and smelled to be half the spices in the kitchen. Why do you hate the poor hungover girl? Rosalind asked. Because the poor hungover girl called me a foul, monkey-toed devil child, Shane answered with a smile. Then she insulted my cooking skills just because I made Cajun-style blackened pancakes. So I spent all night practicing recipes. Now get up, laziness! She stood on one leg and prodded Rosalind with her other unshod foot. Shane then noticed Rosalind's bare shoulders and took an apprehensive hop back. Are you wearing pajamas or going commando? Rosalind adjusted the straps of her silk top in reply. I know you don't need to sleep, but you could use it. You look ghostly. Shane shook her head and some of the ghostliness drifted on the air. That is the flower. It may have exploded all over the kitchen. Shane bit her lip and then perked up. But I made you biscuits. Rosalind stretched her dark limbs in a gesture borrowed equal parts from yoga and stripping. She had an easy 4 inches on her roommate, but her arms and legs implied that it could be more in the right light. Did you really stay up all night? Oh, hell no. I woke up at 9. I may be eldritch and spooky, but I'm not stupid. I like my dreams way too much to give them up for culinary prowess. Now get up, sleepyhead. Brunch awaits. Rosalind sniffed the air, redolent with baking. Did you fry bacon, too? I love me some bacon in the early afternoon, she sang. Shane slid half the omelet conglomerate onto a plate and handed it to her. No bacon as such. See, the biscuits were done, and I was taking them out, but then I realized the frying pan was sizzling because I put it on the hot burner, and I panicked because I didn't want to start the fire alarms and wake you again. So, well, ouch. Rosalind lost her taste for bacon momentarily, which was as long as she was capable of losing it. Instead, she shoved a forkful of omelet into her mouth and asked between chews, You grabbed a frying pan with your bare hands. Yes. I would say it was easily a second-degree burn. Just girl to girl, I can't recommend it. Shane wiggled her unblemished fingers, picked up a biscuit, and tossed it to Rosalind. Third degree is the way to go. It kills all the nerves, so it's almost painless until it heals. Of course, then. I'm going to be late, Rosalind exclaimed when she glanced at the clock, choking on her eggs. For what? It's the weekend, and classes don't start for another week. Your next class is Monday at 10:20, Art History 203, the Renaissance. Not to class, to Dryden. We're supposed to have lunch at the diner, his treat. And it better be. He's the one with the job. How is the walking undead? Shane asked, taking the remains of Rosalind's late breakfast for herself. Rosalind adjusted her bed head in the mirror on the side of the refrigerator. She had put it there because it had the best light in the whole apartment. Though it also served as a dietary aid. It was hard to indulge a pint of Ben & Jerry's because your self-described vampire lover was again being a jerk when you had to watch yourself doing it. Rosalind turned around and considered her ass in the mirror. She would have to switch to a less caloric comfort food or a less truthful looking glass, or possibly a less bipolar relationship. He's okay, I guess, bitching about how tedious his tech support gig is and his mom is getting on his case. Our relationship isn't on the rocks at the moment. Rosalind licked her lips thoughtfully. Suppose that means he'll be great then. Shane whined. You're going to bring him back here? Rosalind shrugged her bare shoulders. Shane groaned. I'll go buy earplugs. Oh, come on, we aren't that loud. Shane rolled her pale blue eyes. Oh, Dry, you're so good. My gods, oh, Venus, touch me. I want to feel dirty. Bitch? Rosalind said as she walked back to her bedroom to change. Maybe if you start putting up for your boy, you wouldn't have such a fixation on what goes on in my bedroom. Oh, and that touch a thing from Rocky Horror, and it's I want to be dirty. But you are dirty, so that works out well. Shane called to Rosalind, dodging the plastic spatula she threw. And Elian and I are taking things slow. There is outputting. I put things in directions. Any slower and you'd both be dead. Rosalind heard Shane's sharp intake of breath, but did not register it until she was tying her corset tight to exaggerate her cleavage. Coming back to the kitchen wearing the taut top and her pajama bottom, she said, "Honey, I didn't mean anything, just an expression." Shane was still a bit touchy about the whole topic of having been sort of dead. "What?" Shane asked, a burnt finger healing in her mouth. The colloquium, the first since May, continued well past dawn. The near noonday sun cast illusions of darkness in proper chambers into the clan's minds. It served them right starting at 5 a.m. to accommodate Louise. Dryden sneered and pronounced Louise's fate. "You have betrayed your kind for the last time, fiend. You die this morn." He raised his hand over her, preparing to strike the first blow in what was certain to be an epic battle. The woman looked to the others for intercession, but they did not move. "You can't do this to me. You're not my sire," the Zofte girl shouted. "There's a protocol. You must do battle with he who made me. I'm but a messenger." "Mayak can't be a part of this if it isn't here, can he?" An acne-speckled boy approached Louise and whispered something in her ear, casting a reverent eye to Dryden and his clenched hand. "What? Since when, loser?" Louise spat. She turned to Dryden. "My sire sends his regards, I am sure, and would see to your insolence were he here." "Ah, but he is not. Clan battles among dancers cannot be postponed because your sire cares more about his private matters than showing me due loyalty. Arm yourself." And with that, she rose to meet his stance, his opponent but equal in the battle. Ken handed them both plastic icosahedrons, each of the 20 sides numbered, Dryden's black and Louise's. They dropped them both on the table at the same time, watching the stuttering rolls until they stopped. 7 beats 12, Dryden, Ken pronounced. "She must be spared owing to the rules of the dance macabre. Louise runs into the forest using her charisma powers to charm you." Dryden sighed and waved her away in pardoning. Then, looking at his watch, he mumbled something vampiric to excuse his leaving and bade his goodbye to the clan. He needed a shower and a change of clothes, though he would have to do without sleep until after work that night. Fortunately, tech support did not require much higher brain functioning. Click that, unplug that, reboot that, repeat. As he hugged her goodbye, Louise whispered in his ear, "I wish you had sired me. I would love to have felt your teeth on my neck." He looked down at her neck, pale before the redness of his zit, and told her he could not be late for his date with Rosalind. She pushed him away, her eyes vacillating between the bedroom and the torture chamber.